talking. All right, now we're back. We're courtside here in Greensboro Coliseum, ACC tournament, 61st annual, and who believes it? The University of Virginia Cavaliers are the number one seed. Who believes? Anyhow, we are very excited. Habo and I are excited that former UVA head coach Terry Holland is with us right now, and this is something we've been hoping for some time.
Yeah, the ACC legend representing the University of Virginia this year, and you know, Coach, I don't know if you've heard me say this before. Having been around Virginia Athletics for the last 40 years, I think you, George Welsh, and Barry Parkhill have had more of a positive influence on Virginia Athletics than any people who have been associated with the program over that period of time.
Well, Habo, as you know, it's always a team effort, and it's those people around you that make things happen. But we all those three people you've mentioned, we're very fortunate to have good people around them. Barry's a player, Coach Welsh is a football coach, and me as a basketball coach. As you know, I have four of those assistants who work for me became ACC head coaches, and another one in Craig Littlepage became an outstanding athletic director in the ACC. So that gives you an idea of how good the people were around me, as well as the players, terrific players, and just good people and great fans from the University of Virginia.
I'll give myself away. My first ACC tournament was the 17th. This is the 61st. When did you first go to an ACC tournament?
Well, the first one was in 1974-75.
Okay, as a head coach.
As a head coach, that's right.
So never had gone as a fan or prior to that. Of course, you were coaching at Davidson before that.
Never had a chance to, because I was always busy either as a player or as a coach myself. And in fact, this is the first one in 10 years, because when I went to East Carolina, of course, I've had duties at this time of the year. And my current duties don't call for me to be in El Paso, Texas, where the Conference USA tournament is.
Well, we're glad you're here. Yeah, over the years as a head coach, 16 of them. I'm sure everybody remembers 76. What are some of your fond memories of ACC tournaments?
Well, of course, the great game between NC State and Maryland always stands out. I think everybody who saw that game or even heard about it, a lot of people that weren't here think they were here. They've talked about it
I actually was here for that, and I must admit, you know, of course, the difference in those days is Maryland arguably was the second best team in the country, and they didn't go to the NCAA tournament back in those days, having lost a championship game.
Absolutely. And actually, before that, when I was playing at Davidson, we had some really good teams that didn't make the tournament because we got upset in the conference tournament, didn't make the NCAA tournament. And in those days, you couldn't even go to the NIT, because if your conference had an automatic qualification to the NCAA, you could not go to another postseason tournament or you would lose your automatic qualification. So our teams, the ones I played on at Davidson, never even had a chance to play in the NIT.
You know, I want to go back down memory lane very quickly. Your second season at UVA, 1975-76, your team was finished sixth during the regular season, but then somehow won three amazing games in Landover up at the old Cap Center, which doesn't even exist anymore. And you claimed UVA's first ACC tournament title. Wally Walker won the Everett Case Award. I can still see the players mobbing you. My dad was up there calling me on the telephone at halftime, almost crying. He couldn't believe it. What were your thoughts as all of that was breaking down? Because who knew that that was going to be such a big thing?
You know, actually, we had played the three teams that we were going to play in the tournament almost in the same order toward the end of the season, and they were all close games. They proved that we could play with those teams. And in spite of the fact, I guess we were naive, we were six out of seven teams, and we thought we would win the tournament. The only thing we felt could keep us from winning it was just running into somebody who was just having a great shooting game, or maybe if we had a game that we couldn't shoot the ball or couldn't find a way to score. But we felt we were very strong defensively, and we had a great offensive player in Wally Walker who could carry the load for us when the offense wasn't working well. It's a five-team offense. He could literally get you a shot, and he could make those shots as well.
And then you come back the next year in 77 and go back to the championship game again.
Yeah, and you know, we really should have won that one. We just literally ran out of gas. We didn't have enough substitutes that year. We didn't have enough players off the bench to be able to continue the intensity of that. But you got to remember, too, back in those days, the number one seed, which in both of those years was North Carolina, had a bye in the first round. So we were playing our third game in just a little over 48 hours, and they were just playing their second game.
And so, by the time 81 rolls around, when you were the number one seed, Georgia Tech had come into the league, so everybody was playing three games at that stage.
And which is more normal, and I think that's the ideal number for a tournament. You know, we got 15 here right now.
And then I think to the 82 season where Dean holds the ball on you in the 47-45 championship game.
But what a great thing that was for college basketball, because we ended up with the shot clock very soon after that.
And you know, it's funny, this year most commentators and players have been talking about shortening the shot clock.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I knew that would come up eventually. I think it's okay where it is. I don't see any reason to change that. I do understand that people like to see scoring and see a lot of excitement, but I think there are a lot of other ways we can make that happen without necessarily just shortening the shot clock and making it more of a hully-gully game.
What is your assessment of college basketball at this stage?
Well, you know, I think it's become so physical, Jim. I do worry about the game, and I worry about the equality of it, because, you know, we don't protect shooters anymore. We're worried about all this stuff that we're working on to make the game less physical. Well, let's just call a foul on a guy when he fouls a shooter. Because you're taking away a chance for 2 points when you do that, as opposed to fouls out on the floor. I'm not nearly as worried about those. And I do think the offensive block and charge call, particularly on an airborne player, is impossible to call. And I think we should just end that. We should either say you can't play, you can't move under an airborne player, regardless of where it is. Why do we have this little circle out there and we're saying it's a dangerous play? It's dangerous anywhere on the court. So maybe eliminate it, or just say we're not going to call it. It's going to be incidental contact, because we can't tell when that defensive player makes that last move after the player leaves the floor or begins the shooting motion. So, again, I think we're trying to get there, but we're not there yet.
And from a coaching standpoint, you know, you have a lot of guys, the top players are, I guess, what they call one-and-doners now, as opposed to most of your career. Guys actually came, of course, Ralph Sampson stayed 4 years, which would never happen today. How does that change things from a coaching perspective?
Well, it changes them drastically, and you know, you got to give John Calipari credit for it. Not many coaches could put a team like that together and get them to play as a team. I mean, he does a fabulous job. Certainly, I don't think it's good for college basketball, but he certainly made a living at it and done it well, and I don't think we should complain about that. We should complain to the NBA. We shouldn't complain about what John Calipari's doing, because he's doing one heck of a job of taking kids and teaching them to play together in 1 year, which is very difficult to do, because most of the teams that you see that are having success in the NCAA tournament are teams that have not only have good players, but have players that have played together for quite some time.
We're courtside here at the ACC tournament in Greensboro, North Carolina, and
with ACC legend and Terry Holland.
And with Terry Holland here, which is exciting. And thank goodness the NC State band just took a rest.
That's the nature of being courtside here.
We have the Hurricanes warming up at one end of the court, and the Wolfpack shooting around. And,
yeah, there's going to be a basketball game here in a few moments.
Holy cow! In about 20 minutes, they're going to be jumping it up. But
you know, Coach, I think the other thing that people are interested in at this stage, and I know you were on the NCAA committee. If what's the NCAA committee doing at this point in time? This is what, Thursday night? What are they looking for relative to seeding teams, bubble teams, all that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, the first thing you have to do is make sure that you give everybody who deserves a chance in the tournament a chance, and then you worry about the seeds, because you can play your way out of a bad seed, but you can't play your way out of not being selected at all. So, again, a lot of time goes into that process and going over it and over and over it. You do try to pay a lot of attention to the seeding as well. I think those guys do a terrific job. I know I was one of the first basketball coaches as an AD to make it to chair the committee as well as to be a committee member. And as basketball coaches, we all complain, oh, the guys on the committee, they're not basketball guys. They need more basketball guys. But as we got more basketball guys, I think all of us looked around and said, hey, these guys do a heck of a job. I've never seen a committee member who really tried to do anything to help their own team. I think they really put a lot of time and effort into it before they came to the actual meetings and the selection process. And I was impressed by every single one of them, whether they were football coaches or fundraisers or whatever they had been before they became athletic directors.
Terry, one thing that Terry Gates, a frequent contributor to Who's Talking, has asked me, he wondered, since one of your last teams, I believe it was 88-89, went to the Elite Eight, he wondered the difference in the caliber of the athletes then versus the athletes that you watch today here at the tournament.
Oh, I watched today's tournament, and that's exactly what I thought. Both of those teams are so athletic, no matter who was playing. And I said, you know, it's a different game. It really is. The Des Wells and kids of that size that can get up. I was watching Furman play the Citadel back during this season, and a little kid, maybe 5'10", drove the baseline for Furman, and he dunked the ball with his elbows. I mean, and I'm like, what? This is Furman in the Southern Conference, and they hadn't won a conference game at that time. I'm thinking, where are these guys coming from?
There are times when I could see clearly the players today are better athletes. Sometimes I'm not sure they're better basketball players. You know, when I was watching the North Carolina NC State game at the end, and Marcus Page, who's left-handed, gets to take the ball all the way to the rim on the left side of the basket, where I'm thinking, you know, why don't you try to force him to go the other way?
At least make him go to his weak side.
Yeah. So, you know, the thought process is still a consideration in basketball as well as the athletic ability.
And you know, the thing is, though, sometimes they can get away with those, what we would call bad plays from a coaching standpoint, because they can make it up with their athletic ability. So they don't mind letting the guy go down even to his strong side because they're going to block the shot. They're
Virginia, convinced. I don't know if you've seen very many Virginia games, but Justin Anderson is one of those guys with incredible athletic ability that can come out of nowhere and make unbelievable plays.
Well, he's a game changer. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can't let you get away from our interview here without talking about your amazing record at UVA. I think people have sometimes they forget how good it was back in your day. And looking back here, 83, Elite Eight, 81, there's the Final Four, 82, the Sweet 16, 84, back to the Final Four, Elite Eight in 88, 89. And you had a tough year in 89, 90. You only made it to the second round. And,
right.
You know, I'm looking here at your overall stats, and you had 9 NCAA bids, 4 NIT bids. You won an NIT championship. You had 2 Final Fours. And you got to coach some tremendous players. Wally Walker, Jeff Lamp, Mark Ivarone, Bobby Stokes, Lee Raker, Ralph Sampson, Jeff Jones.
But his biggest disappointment, he came to Virginia right after I finished.
Yeah, I never had a chance to coach Hobbo.
Yeah, trust me, coach would have taught Hobbo how to play some defense.
Well,
I remember Hobbo.
Our guys would have loved him because there had been plenty of offensive rebounds, second chance opportunities.
There wouldn't have been any passes. Tom Sheehy, Richard Morgan, Kenny Turner, Terry Gates, John Crotty, Brian Stith.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to coach some wonderful players, and all those players, I think, have been on our show, other than Sheehy. We're still trying to find Sheehy. They say he's bicycling across Europe. So thinking back on some of those kids that you got to coach, any memories that stick out, anything funny, any good stories in the locker room?
You know, the funny stories are usually in recruiting.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get those young men to be able to see that the University of Virginia is the place for them. So we did have a lot of good stories. And, of course, most people have heard the one about when Dave Odom went up to pick up Tom Sheehy, and the cab driver ran over Sheehy's dog, and Sheehy jumped out of the cab and ran to his dog, and the dog bit him, and the fangs went all the way through his hand.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank God his mother was a nurse, and she came out and saved the day. She wrapped his hand and said, get back in the cab. You're going down to Virginia, because it was like he's going to stay and take care of the dog or whatever. And she saved the day. She put him back in the cab with his hand bandaged, and we ended up with him.
Well, I'd heard that was a rumor. Another story was about your dog, allegedly named Dean Smith, because it used to cry all the time. Is that true?
Well, no, it really was named after a neighbor, a guy named Dean Dort, who worked in the JAG school at the time. He taught in the JAG school. And he and his wife were good friends of our family. They didn't have children, so they really sort of adopted us as a family, and particularly the youngsters. And when Ann Michael was born, Kate wanted a dog. Our older daughter wanted a dog. So we went out and found a golden retriever, Poppy, and it was a female. And I said, what do you want to name it? She said, Dean. I said, Dean? And she said, yes, after the boy down the street. And I said, well, how are we going to tell the difference between the two? She said, well, it's Dean the dog and Dean the boy, Dad. Okay, honey. It never crossed my mind what was going to happen, because it was like having a photograph in your home that you allow everyone to write the caption to. So everyone would come in and they say, oh, the dog's named Dean. I know why you named it Dean. Da, 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 da. You know, it's got a big nose or whatever it might be that they came
what
up
about,
with.
What about, I ask you, the state of college basketball. What about college athletics? Because I know you've been an administrator for a long time. What are the challenges of college athletics?
I think the challenges right now are, number one, being able to control what we do and be fair to our fans, particularly like Thursday night football games, games during the week, and basketball at 9 o'clock, those kind of things. I don't think they're fair to our fans, and our fans are our bread and butter. So we've got to do something about that. And I think the academic issues are a problem. I don't think that we are all on the same page as far as what we really have to do. And I think we should be talking about a year of residency, which would be similar to the old freshman ineligibility. Give these kids a chance to prove it at the schools that they can do the work, because a lot of times they're coming to us today and people have helped them get their grades and get their SAT scores to be able to qualify by the NCAA standards, and we find that, you know.
Now, does something like that have any chance at this stage within the university community?
I'm not getting any traction, but I've been preaching for a decade, and I'm not going to stop.
Well, I agree with you. I think it'd be terrific.
All right, we're going to head to our final break. When we come back, we've got five more minutes on the other side. Stay with us with Who's Talking, Frank Hobbo and Coach Terry Holland.